Mo, come here, buddy. You're going to be in the movies.
And the person interviewing me wrote those words down, looked up from his piece of paper and said to me, "So do you think we're going to like that?"
Yeah, I do what I do today, Kathy, because of a fourth grade field trip.
No credit to me, just me fumbling along with what I knew at the time and the dog being very forgiving of my mistakes.
What is leadership anyway? Leadership, it's this word that's thrown about in our world today. Oh, it's kind of frustrating. The way people use the word today reminds me a lot of a line from one of my favorite movies. It's from The Princess Bride. You keep using this word. I don't think it means what you think it does. So what is leadership? And more importantly, what is mastery of it? Well, it's one of those things I've been exploring on my own in the last number of years, and in that process, have had the incredible privilege of being exposed to some people who have been leading this work for decades. And one of those people is my guest today. Hey there, everybody. I'm Kathy Brooks, your host for Talk Unleashed, the weekly untethered view of what communication can really look like when we're prepared to be radically honest, radically authentic, and radically compassionate. Conscious communication. It's what I coach, it's what I do, and each week on the podcast, that's what I get to share. Sometimes just my musings, and sometimes in conversation with remarkable human beings. Today on Talk Unleashed, Lisa Kalman. Lisa is a master leadership trainer. She's been in the work for 37 years, long time, and she is a force of nature. Among the many major nuggets of gold that Lisa drops in today's episode is about the experience that she has when she walks into this four-day training. It's part of one of the phases, the levels of training that I went through myself. It's a four-day training session, and she's tasked in that time with helping people identify and break through what are sometimes lifelong patterns of behavior and thinking. The fact that she does it in such a short time tells me that the stories we have about it being too hard to get to know people, well, they're kind of a load of horseshit. We have so many stories around the divisiveness in the world today and how we just can't talk to each other because it's just too hard. Well, if we keep talking about it that way, that's what we're going to continue to get. And in today's episode, Lisa talks about not only how she came to the work, how she prepares herself and gets through the processes that she leads, but how these practices are part of her everyday life. It's not about how you do the work. It's about how you incorporate it, how you integrate it, how you be with the work. And this is a long episode today, so make sure you get yourself nice and comfortable. Settle back, settle in, and listen up. This is Talk Unleashed. I'm so glad to be having this conversation. It's a long time coming.
Yeah.
It's a long time overdue. So before I fully get into this conversation with the remarkable Lisa Kalman, I'm going to tell you a little bit about this wonderful woman with whom we are speaking today. I know Lisa as a transformational trainer and coach. That's how our paths first crossed. Lisa had the dubious honor of seeing me in the very beginning of my transformational journey and seeing me immediately, seeing through my bullshit immediately, and grabbing me ever so gently by the scruff of my neck and pointing me into a mirror and really helping me look at myself in a whole different kind of way. You know, how do you get to look at yourself in a way that is not beating yourself up and making yourself further small and creating even more of a victim story, which I was so good at doing, but how to really lean into direct feedback, how to look at oneself objectively, neutrally, to look at feedback as neutral, sometimes disruptive, but always with love. So how did Lisa come to this? Lisa has been in transformational training and coaching, what, 30?
Almost 37 years.
37 years. So she started when she was just a baby. She transformed her.
transformed early. She's transformed when she was right. two, but came to this from a pretty traditional corporate finance business. You know, the traditional, you grow up a Jewish American princess and you have the structure of here's how your life is going to go. And this is what you're going to do. And if you're going to have a job, this is what it's going to look like. And so yep. really following the path of what had been set out ahead of you. And then you end up in a training, in a transformational training.
Yes. Yes.
And it literally changed the direction of your life. And Lisa has now touched, I mean, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, if not more, based on network effect, based on the people you touch, then going on to touch more people all over the country, around the world, different training centers, her own training center, powerful, compassionate, no bullshit, and badass. These are the words that I would use to describe Lisa. So Lisa, welcome to Talk Unleashed.
Thank you. Yeah. And the author of the book, The Problem Is How You See the Problem.
I was going to get to the book, but I will put the book. So Lisa has also written a book, which was published in 2019, called The Problem Is How You See the Problem, which is really the answer to everything.
It's true. It's so true.
And for those who haven't been through transformational leadership training, you can still read this book. If you haven't been through training, yeah. you haven't yeah. done leadership courses, this is a book that you can read, that you can understand, that you can put notes in it, that you can dog ear it, you can put in post-it and sticky notes, you can keep it on your desk as a handy dandy guide. And I will have a link to get the book for yourselves in the show notes. So Lisa, welcome. And let's start with that moment. You are following the good path that you're supposed to follow, doing right. all the things you're supposed to do. And then all of a sudden you dragged the needle across the record and took a hard right turn.
Yeah. Yeah. So I grew up in Houston, Texas, and I am Jewish. I call myself, I was a Jewish American princess. It's so funny because this charm I'm wearing now, it says sweet 16. And let me just say, I'm not trying to be 16 years old. My dad passed away in April, and in going through his stuff with my half brother and sister, who I adore, I found a couple of things. And what I found were things from a time in my life that felt very sweet to me. My teen years were sweet. I loved high school. I middle school, not so much. You know, we can talk about that. Between the hair and the awkwardness, it was not good. Anyway, I found this, and I found this ring that I actually can only wear it in one hand because this knuckle is different. But anyway, it says love on it. It's got a tiny little, like it's stuff that brings me into connection with my dad and my mom, who have both passed, but particularly my dad, having found that, and he would always be the jewelry giver of the family. So went to college. I have a bachelor's degree in radio, TV, film, interestingly enough, other story. And then I got an MBA. You know, I went, I don't know what I can do with this. I'm going to go ahead and get an MBA. And I did that. And then I worked for a large financial services company. And while I was there, I used to travel Texas to Colorado. And in Denver, the energy of that environment, that office I worked in, was very different. This was the 80s. It was the oil crisis. Both those cities were in a recession. But in Denver, people were like alive and extraordinarily successful. So I'm just like in my unconscious way going, what? How come? What are you guys doing? And two of my friends said, well, we did this training. And I really did think I was headed to a sales training, a management training, a leadership training, something businessy. And at that point, the first level training that you have done that was 3 days was 5 days. It was three evenings and 2 days. And I literally, like most people in life, when they go to a new thing that's uncomfortable or different, I sent my image in. So first night I sent my image in, my image comes back, and I'm like, my real self is a little like, well, how was it? And my image goes, it's okay, kind of interesting, but you better send me back tomorrow. Send my image back on day two and comes back like, whoa, even deeper, even more interesting, but I better go back one more time. So day three, which is kind of that game we play in the first level. And incredible wake up call, mirror for my life in a very uncomfortable way. And yet so profound. My image came back and said to me, you need to go tomorrow. And from that moment, I was all in. I was all in. Now, I was still in my life, living my career, et cetera. And in the second level training, and you had a similar experience in yours, I was the first person lucky enough for my trainer to talk to. Let me just say it that way. So, which meant she saw, like Kathy had said, she saw through my stuff really fast, like that. And in that moment, and I hadn't even, she said it from behind where I was seated. It was all in person at that time. I didn't even need to see her to know. I was like, I cannot hide here anymore. And part of me was like, ah, shit. And part of me was, oh, thank God. Thank God I can't pull my, and I didn't even know I was doing it half the time, but I could play the game of whatever the game I was in pretty well. And somewhere after that, I loved the whole process. I participated as you have. I jumped in. Somewhere in that, I went, oh, this is what I'm pulled to. I don't even think I got yet. Oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. But like, I'm really pulled to this. And I'll never forget one of my coaches saying to me, basically, when are you going to surrender? And for me, what that meant was, I didn't have a vision anymore for my life. My vision had me.
Say more about that.
It wasn't like, oh, I have these lovely plans and purpose and I'm going to, you know, kind of direct it and live my little corporate, nice, abundant, affluent life and do some stuff on the side a little bit, like fitting it in. It was this moment where I realized my vision had me, meaning I am surrendered to, not in a giving up way, because I think the world has surrendered in a funky conversation sometimes context, more like a allowing and a letting go of control or attachment or resistance. I'm surrendered to this.
It's like the difference, I'm hearing the difference between surrender and resignation. Like it's not whatever. Okay, fine. This is good. Yeah. It's like, okay, I'm just going to let go.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. I never thought of it this way, but surrender happens with full choice. In my experience, resignation happens when you don't think you have choice.
Yeah.
Or choices.
Yeah. I want to go back to one other thing that you sent your image in.
Yeah.
Your real self. So let's be clear. Lisa's not schizophrenic. She doesn't have multiple personality disorder. She's not sitting in her room talking to herself and then answering herself in different voices. So you had an awareness already that you were hedging your bets.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Somewhere along my upbringing, I learned one of my strategies of survival. We talk about this in our work, that your strategy of survival isn't survival like I need to eat food and I need to have a shelter, you know, someplace to sleep. It's my survival, emotional survival strategy. So depending on your upbringing, so, you know, quick example would be, we've all heard of middle children, you know, a middle child, the person who brings everybody together, tries to smooth things over, doesn't really step out one way or the other, la, la, la. You know, that's their survival strategy to whatever, receive love, get approved of, be accepted, et cetera. So one of my survival strategies was looking at a situation, like seeing where I was and how do I look pretty good? And it wasn't like, let me dress up and be this and that. It was, how do I participate in a way that has me at some level approved of for doing the, you know, basically the right thing? And so in a work environment, it would be, yes, it would be dedication and working hard, but it would also mean I wouldn't necessarily make waves or be completely honest if there was a situation that was troublesome.
So you say that about yourself, and it boggles my mind because it is literally the antithesis of who I know you to be.
Right. Well, it's
blowing.
Well, we do gravitate to what we need to learn most in life. You know, I don't know that I would have named it my image in those moments, but I knew I wasn't all in. Hedging my bets, seeing, okay, in this particular thing called this training, how do I participate? I don't want to be one of those people sitting in the back of the room who folds their arms up and doesn't do anything. How do I participate and still not really risk emotionally either being vulnerable or maybe, you know, looking bad or doing something wrong or I don't, whatever it was I was trying not to experience at the time. Which is, as you say, interesting because now I lead a process where I invite people to look at what are those experiences we don't want to feel. Like we'll almost do anything not to feel them, including end up ruining our marriages, our relationships, you know, distancing ourselves from family, sometimes sabotaging our well-being physically or financially through our career, all to not have to feel something that won't necessarily kill us. Feeling sadness or pain or doubt or disappointment or grief even generally doesn't kill us.
The irony is that the things that we do to not feel those feelings, which aren't going to kill us, the things that we do often can.
Mm-hmm. True.
When you walk into a training and you kind of, you know, so much of it is done virtually now. There's some that are hybrid where it's partially in person and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you're assessing, kind of assessing the space, kind of getting the read on the room, what's that like for you?
Good question. I like to listen, either that they're having a dynamic on their own and I get to participate within that, or ask questions and hear from people there's a couple of things I'm always tuning into. I'm tuning into energetically, what do I experience? You know, is it an openness? Is it closed? Does it feel defensive? Does it feel lighthearted, joyful, heavy? And then what are they saying? How are they saying it? You know, you're a communications expert. Language is, you know, Heidegger, I think it wrote, language is the house of being. You know, our language is a very clear representation of our inner thinking. So I'll listen that way. And I, you know, there's a part that I don't really know how it happens. I don't actually feel like it's me. I feel like something's moving through me to something more divine is moving through me to impact the people in front of me.
You touch on something really powerful, which is the energy in the space. I mean, we all know that, you know, my physical being, your physical being, the chair I'm sitting in, like this is all just energy, and that energy moves. It doesn't, you can't extinguish it. You just, it's like whack-a-mole. You push it down in one place and it pushes out, somewhere else. But even that idea of squelching something to move it, as opposed to being in the flow of it and being integrated with it. Mm. And I'd imagine, especially given the level of the training where you spend so much of your time now, I know you've trained all of the levels and have vast expertise in all of it, but this second level of the training, that invitation for disruption, that invitation to disrupt old patterns and explore the very energy in the room has to be a pretty potent experience. How do you, well, to shield yourself would be to separate yourself, but how you create a safe space for yourself where you can be really fully integrated with it, but not take it on as yours? And
In it, but not devastated by it. Yeah.
Right.
Great. Again, great question. I don't know if I know the answer to all of that, actually. I do know that I'm good at being with people, hearing, feeling, connecting, empathizing with whatever's going on for them. Could be emotionally difficult, triggering, whatever. And not taking it with me. I've trained tens of thousands of people, and maybe, like I said, hundreds of, I might remember three things in 30 years that people said directly to me about their life. Like, in other words, you could tell me something very intimate, very, and it isn't that I'm not with you in the moment. I just don't walk home with it. Because I would completely disintegrate. You know, it would be like, you know, the energy. And I it's very interesting because always when I go to a training, I come home and I'm like, I'm always so surprised. I feel tired and somewhat depleted. I'm just like, oh, I'm so tired and depleted, you know, because I'm not a tiredy kind of person. I'm not just like, oh, I'm so tired today. It's just not me. And I'm like, I don't know why I'm surprised, because I've just spent four intimate, powerful days with somewhere between 30 and 130 people in their lives with them as they emotionally release. So to say that, how do I do that? I don't put a bubble around myself. I think I allow it to move through me. And I think sometimes I can do a better job of that when I get home, not during the training. I'm good during the training. It's never like, it's always, and I somewhat only know this because I went to a retreat right after a training one weekend, and it was a kind of a meditation retreat, and my body was a wreck. It was because I went right into one intense thing to another, and I didn't give myself any space between. I'm like, oh, well, maybe I need that space. You know, I'm just like, let's go, let's go, let's go, you know? So for any of you that work with people, you work with people, I think of healers, definitely, you know, chiropractors, Reiki, et cetera, coaches. I think of nurses. I think doctors. I think of anybody who works with people's energy. And we all do at some level. Let me just say that. Find ways to literally, I mean, you can emotionally shut it off. Some people take Epsom salt baths when they get home, you know, suck it out. Find ways to give yourself buffer. Because I do think that, especially during COVID, if we listened to the drain, emotional and psychic drain of our health practitioners, I don't think it was as, and it was a lot of hours and it was a lot of work, but I think it was way more. They didn't have space to recover.
I've been finding out, because one of the things that's interesting about the virtual world is so many people have this tendency to book meetings hour to hour to hour. And for me, I have to stick in at least a 15-minute buffer between client calls so that I don't bring one client call into the next, that I want to make sure that I take a minute to really, you know, make my mental note, you know, note where we get to work, whatever follow-up there is, but then really to also like just reset myself, stretch, move around, whatever it is I need to do. Because what I'm hearing you say, it's about that you're fully present. Because my experience of you, not just in my own training, but having been with you in multiple training rooms and kind of witnessed you both as staff and that sort of thing, is you are 150% present with any person you're talking to in the moment that you're talking with them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the thing that blew my mind was, though you may not recall the specificity of the conversation, you remember the person.
Yes. Yeah, I do.
Right? That you, because I remember our having a conversation, and I don't recall exactly when it was, but I remember you saying something to me along the lines of asking me about something that had been going on, and you didn't remember exactly what it was, but you knew exactly how I was feeling about it and what it was bringing up for me,
mm-hmm.
which yeah. is really the important part.
Right.
Right. It's like the tactical bits are the things in life that actually, like, it could be Tuesday, it could be Thursday, it could be any other day that ends in Y, it could be a good day, a bad day. Like, it doesn't really, right? But also right back around to how I do one thing is how I do it all, right? That the friction that I have with one person is because they're reminding me of somebody, usually my mother. Yes. my mother.
Oftentimes our parent, one of the
Oftentimes
two.
A parent. And to realize that so much of this work that you get to do is about getting down, like, the what happened, like the what's happened, the tactical bits, less relevant than how are you being. And how can you shift how you're being so that you have a different experience when this situation comes up again, because it will, because over and over.
Relating to it, you know, before even how you being, how are you relating to it? How are you seeing this? And how we see it determines then how we're going to be with it and the actions we take around it. So if we see it as a threat, whether it's somebody says to you something and you hear it as criticism and judgment because mom was critical and judgmental, and that threatens your emotional security and safety, that's a different, you'll have a different relationship in that moment. There'll be possibly a shutting down or a distancing versus mom or dad or whoever it was, super empowering, supportive. You feel warm and fuzzy about that. And that person triggers those emotions. And I'm like, oh yeah, here I am. I'm open.
So the problem is how you see the problem.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yeah. The book that has one sentence.
Yes. Right. The problem is how you see the problem.
Yeah, blank pages behind you. Figure it out from here.
Yeah. There's lots of blank pages for doodling.
Right. It's so funny because I want to write a workbook that goes with the book. And I'm like, oh, that's what I should do. Hi, go.
So let's talk about the book that you knew you had in you. You know, that was in there. How did this come to pass? How did this become the message? With all of the messages that you could share, with all of the vast array of topics that you could dig into, how did this become the one that percolated up?
Again, great question. I love your questions. I believe when I thought about, I should write a book, I really thought from tactical, like, oh, it's a good credibility creator. And it was like a tactical, like, good idea. And then as I started to think about what's the book, I mean, and I did a course that supported it and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what is this going to be about? Because my block, and I believe everybody who thinks they have a book in them does. And my limiting belief was whatever I say has been said 1,000 times. Because the work I'm living and participating in has been around 45 years, almost, it'll be 50 years in a couple of years. Okay. The way kind of we've been doing it in different versions. So but that was my own limiting belief that how I have it and how I be it and how I present it and how I work with people isn't valuable or isn't distinct. So my very short 115-page book took me 2 years to write. Now, it didn't need to take that long, and that's what it took for me to go through my process. So I was sitting there in the court. I knew I wanted to do fundamental distinctions of transformation that anyone could read, and also that would make sense and still be valuable, not water it down, and have people who've done transformation look at it as a reminder, a tool, like pick up any page and boom, there you are.
It's kind of my go-to book for people that I talk to who aren't necessarily interested in doing the training, or they think it's too woo-woo or they're planning to do it, but they haven't done it yet. And so my go-to book is your book, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm sitting there and it's like, well, you need a title. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm like, not the basics of transfer. I'm like, oh, and all of a sudden it hit me like, well, the fundamental conversation that this is that the way we see life, the interpretation we give it, the perspective we give it determines our experience of life. And we have choice about that. And so if people can see the problem is how they see the problem, then all the things they think are problems can dissipate. So it's both it's catchy, but it's also like, wake up. If you got this, your life would be totally freed up.
So let's look at that for a second and with this being such an evergreen conversation that we are having, I'm pretty sure that no matter when someone is listening to this, there will be some sort of catastrophe somewhere in the world that we will be dealing with as a society, at least within our lifetime. Mm-hmm. I do believe in a time of more ease and flow. And I believe we are on the path to get there for sure.
Yep.
In these times at this moment, as we sit having this conversation on the solstice, December 2023.
Oh, yes.
Happy solstice. Happy winter solstice.
Happy solstice, everyone. Yeah.
That
summer in, our, in summer in the southern hemisphere.
Summer solstice, if you're on the other side of the equator, happy solstice to you as well. Yeah. And we're in a time that seems, Lisa, so impossible. Like, people are in such hate and such fear. It's not really hate, it's fear is what's really underneath all of that.
For sure.
And divisiveness and pointing fingers and mocking people and making humor about making other people feel badly about themselves. And how to, when people are like, you're crazy, things are really shit right now. They really are. And there's a lot of evidence to point to validity to that. And yet the only way to shift that evidence to something else is to come at it from a different perspective.
Absolutely.
So what would you say to that?
I actually wrote a little blog or something towards the beginning of the Israel-Gaza war that I quoted the Einstein quote, which I'm not going to quote right, but basically we can't get to the solution from the same thinking that created the problem. We cannot get there from here. And I don't mean we can't improve our world. I have faith about that. I do. And I don't think it's an accident that we are talking today on the solstice, because in the Northern Hemisphere, the solstice is the time where the light starts to get longer and bigger. And so it isn't about eradicating hate or war or anything. It's about bringing love, light to that. You cannot get rid of hate with hate.
Martin Luther King.
Exactly. Only through love. And I think somebody else too, some other saint or something, said something pretty similar, I'm sure.
You'd think we'd get the point by now.
One would. And every evolution to another leap in consciousness in our fairly short time on Earth, given how long Earth has been here, has required bumpiness. And I'm going to say bumpiness very meaningfully, but also knowing death, wars, plagues, floods,
You're checking all of the boxes. We've had floods recently. We have the pandemic. We've had our plague. I'm waiting for the wild beasts.
Yes.
And the locusts.
Locust.
Oh, wait, no, we had the locusts a couple of years ago. That happened. So
one of the reasons I do this work, besides I love it, and a couple of reasons, let me say. One, I love it. It's what I realized I'm supposed to be doing because it's the thing that brings who I am into the world. But I get to hold myself accountable to being the best version of myself most of the time. Not all the time, but most of the time. I, like all of us left to my own devices, get very not my best self. So as I'm with people, I'm always asking myself to be a bigger possibility. Mothering does that too, by the way, for those of you out there that are parents. Let me say, that's the other place that I've had to confront myself as powerfully as I did in the work. So I also stand for this work because I think it elevates the consciousness, and I think it brings more people into a elevated thinking and relating to the world as not over there, messed up, it's screwed. And these people, if we got rid of all these people, everything would be fine, or whatever version of that some people live in, but that we are connected. That guy that I so distasteful what's coming out of his mouth or her mouth in a moment is not separate than me. Now, do I have to be friends with them? No. Do I have to believe the same thing they believe? No. Or do I need to go embrace them and hug them? Not necessarily. And if I can know that that's a human being who got here through their own trials, tribulations, fears, and upbringing, and this is the best they can, they're doing the best they can given what they know, then I can have compassion and shift something. So I'm standing here because if enough of us, this is the whole critical mass thing, if enough of us elevate our consciousness, we will balance out the negativity. Now, some people call that good and evil. I don't go there. It's just not my thing. And I don't have any problem with it. But the balancing is important. And it doesn't have to be 50-50. Thank goodness it doesn't have to be 50-50.
So what I find really interesting, I had occasion to attend a wedding that was literally at the start of this year. It was a New Year's Eve wedding. And the day after the wedding was at a brunch. And so we're at the, you know, bride's family's house and it's brunchy brunchy. And the attendees, the participants at the wedding pretty much skewed in one particular swath of the, the political spectrum.
Yep.
And I was listening to, I was sitting at a table having, just listening to a conversation of the people around me and hearing the dripping judgment tone, literally like spitting out someone's name, like almost as if they were spitting. And I paused for a moment and thought to myself, do I do it? Do I plant a flag in this and open up a conversation? I'm like, well, it's a table of friendlies. Like if there's a place for me to do it, you know, I'm not where they are, but I'm certainly more inclined. Right. Yeah. And
they're not going to pull a gun out.
No, they're not. Well, and if for no other reason that they're in someone's home and it's not that kind of house,
different
kind of home that might actually happen. But the point being, you know, when I said these people who you're, you know, well, first I asked the permission. I'm like, hey, so I have some views that may differ a little bit. Would you guys be open to hearing some thoughts on that? And everyone said, of course, yes. And I said, so what if I were to suggest that none of the people you've just talked about are the problem? That they're that they exist as a symptom of a greater of a greater problem.
Yeah.
And you would have think that I just farted during the vows at a wedding. I mean, and you know, it was really interesting to experience the defensiveness, like, no, those people are wrong because we are right. And I was like, look, I'm not saying that I agree with the things being said. And no, things shouldn't be said that draw harm to people. Like there get to be boundaries of literal safety for sure.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And have we gone so far to the pale that a reasonable conversation has to be couched in such terms that we can't have the honest, like that, what you just said wasn't okay with me. It was incredibly awkward.
Yeah.
And I just watched two of them kind of leaned in and really engaged. And we had a really deep, meaningful conversation. And the others, one by one, kind of shut down and, oh, I should go get a drink. Anybody want anything? Or I'm going to go. And like they disappeared, never to return. You know, and these are highly educated people who propose themselves to be peacemakers.
Sure.
So I say all of that to say, What are your words of counsel, comfort,
in the midst of those moments?
In the midst of the shitstorm, when what you really want to do is scream at the top of your lungs and say, stop it, for crying out loud. But it's like people who don't want to hear, like they're going to hear what they want to hear.
Well,
here's the question. Okay. How do you, Lisa, find your strength to continue to be that stand, strong AF, focused? That's where we're going. How do you do that?
I think that's actually a different question than what I would offer in situations. So the situation you're talking about is a situation many people end up in, and it's the holidays, and I'm sure this will come out after the holidays. But anyway, bottom line, being with people who in your life have completely different views of whatever it is, politics, spirituality, relationships, I don't know what. Politics seem to be a hotbed at the moment, but you know, at times it's been religion or whatever. And that seems to be a thing too. I think first and foremost, being present to, one, your experience is absolutely valid and personal. Their experience is absolutely valid and personal. So before we go making them idiots and wrong, even if they aren't as educated as the people you were talking to, that's their experience. Number two, personal responsibility. Big fan of it. Big fan of it. How am I responsible for this in my life? How is this part of me? You could go all the way to how am I generating it to, well, wait a minute. How is this a mirror for me? If I'm personally responsible, and I'm responsible for how I'm relating to them. Nobody's in my body making me feel pissed off at them for being so whatever we think they are. And then three, engage in hearing how they have it. Meaning, as we often hear people say, get curious, ask questions. Ask questions like, so
your dog is just being curious.
Yeah, you're being curious. I really hear that's important to you and you've got a lot of conviction about it and it's important and I want to honor how you have it. Can you help me understand? Because here's how I see and how do you see it? And can you help me understand? Can you break it apart for me so I can see how you have it and I don't have such resistance? And they may just pontificate and not engage, or they might engage and it actually becomes a open discussion.
So we're obviously speaking of this in this moment in the abstract, in the lovely little safe Petri dish that is Talk Unleashed,
yes,
where everything,
yes,
is happy. So right. In the moment when you can feel the physiological being threatened, fight, flight, freeze, fawn, like, what am I going to do? What are some things that you do to keep yourself in that grounded enough space so that you can?
Right. Yeah, I don't have a lot of it around me. I know when I'm in a training room, there's a million points of view and some are very far apart. And because the work of transformation is so much about whatever you're saying is irrelevant, because it's how did you get to how you're saying it? Like, what's the problem? How you see the problem? Or what's the core? Where's the start? I'm working so much there. All that other stuff within that container called the train doesn't matter to me. I get sometimes it matters to them and they get all stuck. But really, at least in that environment, people are committed and engaged in, okay. And my vision for that is that it unlocks enough of the stuckness in the point of view, the righteousness around the point of view on any side about anything, so that we can go, okay, wait a minute. This is how I see it. This is how I have it. And other people have it, how they have it. Now, if I'm in the middle of depends on where I am. Not many people in my family are very different than me. I'm sure I set myself up not to be in certain environments. I really do. Depending on the relationship I have with those people, I might engage and I might not. I might just work myself. At a minimum, let me just say, I will work myself as to, wow, I have all this resistance. I'm in super judgment. Part of it's by fear. Part of it, I'm so incredulous at how they could be thinking that way, about whatever it is. What is that? Why has that got me? How do I bring compassion or love or there? So I'm not always going to engage. And like I said, depending on the relationship, the way our relationship, me and that person or those people are in relationship. So if it's one of my sons says something that I find offensive, I engage. And I talk about, here's why this is offensive or upsetting to me or whatever it is. If it's somebody I happen to be sitting in a coffee shop or a grocery store and I overhear somebody say something that's offensive, I'm probably not going to engage with them. I don't have permission and they're not my relationship to handle or to get myself in the middle of. I can still, on a consciousness level, bring something to that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's where I go with that. So, I mean, I'm a damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead. I'm going to walk into the oh, look, that conversation's in breakdown. That looks like a fun thing to work on.
Let's go just over there.
Look, those people over there are punching each other. Maybe I should go. Yeah. Let me just go over. Those are people I haven't met yet. I should go meet my new friends. And I know that that's a unique superpower that I have, which
absolutely.
Is you know, why I incline like to do Cooper. The work that I do.
You're like my dog, Cooper. He's never met anybody who wasn't.
There are no strangers, just the friends you haven't met yet.
Well, and if you are a, let me just say, an advocate, fan, stand for love, capital L, love, God, love, some people call universe, spirit, love, divine spirit. That's all there is.
Basically, the Beatles were right, is what I'm hearing
always.
You say.
In every single possible way.
Yes. Every single possible way.
Yes.
So in the couple minutes that we have left, I would love to know where you see your work going. Like, what's on the horizon? What, what's the next level of transformation for you?
Well, talking about where transformation is going to go is so fascinating today versus 5 years ago. COVID, as we all know, brought a world to all of us through virtual format, no matter what we're up to, including transformation that transcends the physical necessity to be together. Now, do I still love doing in-person live stuff? Love it. Nothing like a human touch and hug. And where AI is going to take us is really, I'm really thankful I'm old as I am and probably don't have to navigate this nearly as much as my sons are going to get to. And there's, you know, good news, bad news, just like all of it. But I think that's going to be a very fascinating next level of transformation as an industry. For me, I must say that I have come to appreciate that I love the boutique work, I'm going to call it. And what I mean by boutique is I'm probably not going to get on a Zoom with 4,000 people like Tony Robbins and do the thing. I really love my trainings when I can see everybody, know everybody, all of that. Even that certain level, it's like, oh, you know, it's a big training, you know. So by boutique, I don't mean it's got to be totally small and not effective at touching lives. I'm talking about boutique like intimate, connected, deep work through the work you know me to do. Plus, I have my Money, Wealth, and Miracles course. Plus, Lynn and I do, my business partner, Lynn Sheridan, who's an amazing human, do work with women. We call it our Badass Women's Leadership Series. And it's really about empowering the feminine essence of women to lead the future. Because I'm really clear that I think another way out of the world is a shitstorm at the moment is through feminine leadership. And I don't mean frilly, I mean feminine essence. We've been so out of balance for so long that it's not about flipping to one side. One of my women I love, Lynn Twist, talked about, you know, we've been doing this for so long, like a bird, like with one wing, the masculine. We're kind of going in circles if you only have one wing flapping. Yeah. And then once we do this, we can actually soar. Mm. Really a brilliant metaphor, I thought. That's what I see. I love what I do. I'm going to stick to what I do. Maybe I'll do more ways of bringing transformation and the intimate, connected, I see you, I believe in you, I'm not getting off it about your amazing, extraordinary magnificence. I'm all in for that.
We did it again. Another episode of Talk Unleashed. It's so great to have you here. And you know what would be even more great? If you could scoot over to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, maybe even Spotify, and leave a review. Over on Apple, you actually have the chance to say a little bit about the episode. Spotify, just throw some stars on there, hopefully 5. It helps us get seen and helps ensure that this conversation and conversations like it keep getting heard by the people who need to hear them. So do us a favor, hop on over and leave a review. And in the category of saying awesome things about awesome people, huge thanks to my producer, John McLean, and the team at Monster Sound and Picture. They are just the best. And if you've got ideas or questions or feedback, I read all the email that comes in. So feel free to toss a message to talkunleashed@gmail.com. That's talkunleashed@gmail.com. Let me know what you like, what you don't like, who you want to hear from, all the groovy stuff. And most of all, thank you. Thank you for listening, for being part of the conversation, and for keeping the conversation going. See you next week.